Lee Rivers' Insatiable has become TikTok's most talked about dark romance of the year, with readers filming their shocked reactions to its most controversial scenes. This first installment in Rivers' trilogy follows the toxic, obsessive relationship between Stacey Rhodes and Cade Mitchell, the son of infamous serial killer Tobias Mitchell. What began as an enemies-to-lovers tale quickly spirals into a psychological thriller exploring the darkest corners of desire, trauma, and revenge. The novel has gained a cult following for its unflinching portrayal of morally gray characters, with celebrities like Megan Fox and Travis Barker spotted with copies. Rivers doesn't shy away from taboo subjects, earning both praise for her raw authenticity and criticism for glorifying toxic relationships. But the book's exploration of how trauma shapes identity has resonated deeply with readers seeking stories that don't offer easy answers. Cade Mitchell and Stacey Rhodes meet during his twin sister Luciella's birthday celebration. 15-year-old Cade, known for being introverted, finds himself intrigued by the quiet newcomer sitting by herself near the pool. Their first encounter is charged with youthful defiance. She borrows something of his without asking, creating an unexpected moment of connection. Despite his reputation for keeping others at a distance, Cade surprises himself by responding warmly to her presence. Learning she's from his sister's dance class, they exchange playful warnings about avoiding each other, marking the beginning of their complicated dynamic. Their initial friction transforms into a meaningful connection during their teenage years. A pivotal moment occurs during a group camping activity, where they discover an unexpected emotional resonance. "Everything else faded away," Cade remembers of their significant first interaction. What was meant to be a brief moment extends as neither wants to break their connection. Their relationship develops through discreet interactions, subtle gestures during group activities, late-night conversations, and private meetings in familiar spaces. The story's emotional depth comes from their gradual trust building. Cade, who typically maintains strict personal boundaries, finds himself comfortable with Stacey's presence in ways he never expected. A touching moment occurs when she reaches out to him, and he gently redirects her gesture, showing their growing understanding of each other's comfort zones. For Stacey, Cade represents security and authenticity, particularly meaningful given her challenging home situation with her stepbrother Chris. Their relationship deepens with mutual trust and understanding. "I know you'll be careful with me," Stacey tells him, establishing the foundation of their emotional bond. This deep-rooted trust makes their eventual separation particularly poignant. When the narrative shifts to the present, 6 years later, everything has changed. Cade and Stacey haven't spoken in 2 years, and the once tender feelings between them have curdled into bitter hatred, particularly on Cade's part. "You are nothing. You're fucking dead to me," were his last words to her before cutting contact. Now 21, Stacey teaches dance and aerial acrobatics while living with her abusive stepbrother Chris. Cade has transformed physically and emotionally. His once lean frame, now muscular and covered in tattoos, including one that deliberately covers a rose tattoo he once got for Stacey. His silver-blue eyes have darkened, and his demeanor has hardened into something dangerous. When circumstances force them together, first when Cade picks up Stacey from a one-night stand, and later when they miss their flight to America and must share a hotel room, the tension between them is electric. Their bodies remember what their minds want to forget. "Despite claiming to hate me, his body betrays him," Stacey observes during one heated encounter. Rivers masterfully builds the mystery of what destroyed their relationship. Cade repeatedly references a video showing Stacey's betrayal, while Stacey insists, "I didn't know what I was doing. I wanted you." The truth remains tantalizingly out of reach for much of the novel, with both characters unable or unwilling to have an honest conversation about what happened. Their interactions oscillate between vicious verbal sparring and intense sexual encounters that leave them both emotionally raw. After one particularly intimate moment, Cade abruptly pulls away and locks himself in the bathroom, leaving Stacy confused and hurt. This pattern repeats throughout the novel, moments of vulnerability immediately followed by cruelty as both characters struggle with their unresolved feelings. Perhaps the most shocking revelation is Cade's transformation from troubled teenager to professional killer. 2 years after their breakup, Cade works as an assassin for Bernadette Sawyer, the head of Police Scotland who secretly runs criminal operations. The irony is palpable. The son of Scotland's most notorious killer has become a killer himself, though on a much larger scale. "I've killed more than 100 people in just 2 years, while he's killed 4," Cade reflects when comparing himself to his father. Cade's descent into this dark world is gradually revealed through his inner monologue. After his devastating breakup with Stacy, he spiraled into drug use and self-destruction, making him vulnerable to Bernadette's manipulation. "She approached him outside the dance studio when I was contemplating going inside," he recalls, a pivotal moment when he might have reconciled with Stacy, but instead was pulled into Bernadette's web. Now Cade lives a double life. To his family, he's simply their troubled son and brother who disappeared for 2 years. To the criminal underworld, he's known as Knave, a man without a heart who always completes his assignments. The violence he inflicts is described in unflinching detail, from beheading a man in Holyrood Park to torturing a gang leader who disrespected Stacy. What makes Cade's character complex rather than simply villainous is his internal struggle. He recognizes the monster he's become, but feels powerless to change. "I get an adrenaline rush when I hurt people," he admits. "I know it's wrong, but it's built into me now." Yet he still maintains certain principles. He primarily targets abusers and rapists, finding moral justification in eliminating those who hurt others. When Stacy witnesses him kill someone who threatened her, her horror forces Cade to confront the person he's become. "Sometimes people need to change to survive," he tells her, a statement that applies equally to his transformation into a killer and her own survival mechanisms in an abusive household. While Cade's descent into violence forms one narrative thread, Stacy's ongoing abuse at the hands of her stepbrother Chris forms another. From their first interaction, it's clear Chris has been tormenting Stacy for years. He monitors her movements, threatens her, and physically assaults her when she disobeys him. "I tried telling my father when Chris forced his mouth on me in the shower the day we moved in," Stacy recalls, "but he refused to listen." The bruises on Stacy's body become a recurring motif throughout the novel. Cade notices them immediately and becomes obsessed with identifying who hurt her. These marks represent not only Chris's physical abuse, but also Stacy's inability to escape or speak her truth. When Luciella questions the bruises, Stacy lies, claiming she fell downstairs, a pattern of deception she's maintained for years. Rivers hints at even darker aspects of this abuse. Chris's possessive language, "you belong to me," and actions, carving a small purple scar on her breastbone with a key to mark her as his property, suggest sexual abuse beyond what's explicitly described. Later revelations confirm that Chris has drugged Stacy and allowed multiple men to rape her, traumas she's never fully processed or disclosed. This ongoing abuse explains much about Stacy's behavior. Her reluctance to return home, her habit of staying with friends whenever possible, and her complicated relationship with intimacy all stem from these experiences. When she finally confronts Cade about his misunderstanding of the video that ended their relationship, she can barely articulate what happened. "I didn't know what I was doing. I wanted..." The words, "I was raped," remain unspoken, trapped in her throat. The parallel between Stacy and Cade emerges through their different responses to trauma. While Cade externalized his pain through violence against others, Stacy internalized hers, becoming skilled at hiding her suffering. Both developed survival mechanisms that ultimately keep them isolated and unable to trust. Despite their mutual hatred, Cade and Stacy remain obsessed with each other. Kate admits to watching Stacy when she's on the estate, in the studio, or at the mall, even climbing to her window to watch her sleep. "If I don't see her at least once a day, I lose my mind," he confesses to his father. This surveillance extends to tracking her romantic partners. He admits to beating and burning the house of a man Stacy slept with. Stacy's obsession manifests differently. Though she claims to be over him, she can't stop responding to his touch or thinking about their past. When they're forced to share a hotel room, she finds herself studying his tattoos, his muscular physique, the changes in him since they were together. Her body betrays her mind's insistence that she hates him. Their sexual encounters throughout the novel reflect this dangerous obsession. Each interaction becomes increasingly intense and boundary-pushing, culminating in a disturbing scene where they have sex next to the body of a man Cade has just killed. The violence and passion intertwine in ways that are both disturbing and revealing of their damaged psyches. Rivers doesn't romanticize this obsession, but presents it as a symptom of their unresolved trauma and inability to communicate honestly. Cade's possessiveness stems partly from his father's influence. Tobias Mitchell was infamous for kidnapping Cade's mother to force her into a relationship, and partly from his fear of losing Stacy again. Stacy's continued attraction to Cade, despite knowing what he's become, reflects her normalized experience with violence and her desperate need for connection with someone who once made her feel safe. The central mystery driving the plot is what happened to destroy Cade and Stacy's relationship 2 years ago. Cade repeatedly references a video showing Stacy with another man, which he interpreted as betrayal. Stacy insists she didn't know what she was doing, but struggles to articulate the full truth. Near the novel's end, the truth finally emerges through a conversation between an unnamed narrator, implied to be Stacy, and Tobias Mitchell. The video showing them cheating was actually edited footage from 3 hours of non-consensual activity while drugged. This revelation recontextualizes everything. Stacy wasn't unfaithful, but was sexually assaulted, likely by her stepbrother Chris, who recorded and edited the footage to deliberately destroy her relationship with Cade. Even more devastating is the revelation that Stacy was pregnant with Cade's child at the time. "She was my granddaughter," the narrator tells Tobias, implying they lost the pregnancy, possibly due to the assault. This explains Cade's obsessive checking of an ultrasound image on his phone and his emotional breakdown when recalling a baby girl they were expecting. This truth transforms our understanding of both characters' actions. Cade's violent spiral wasn't simply a response to betrayal, but to a deeper trauma he couldn't process, the loss of both his partner and their child. Stacy's inability to tell him the truth stems from her own trauma and fear that he wouldn't believe her, calling her attention-seeking, manipulative, toxic. Beyond the central relationship, Rivers constructs a complex and insidious web of power dynamics involving Cade's employers. Bernadette Sawyer, the formidable head of Police Scotland, and her husband Archie represent institutional corruption at its most extreme, using their positions of authority to manipulate, blackmail, and destroy lives while maintaining carefully cultivated public personas as pillars of the community. Their influence extends deep into local politics, law enforcement, and business circles, creating an almost impenetrable shield of respectability. Bernadette's control over Cade began when he was still a vulnerable teenager in the care system, suggesting she methodically groomed him for his current role. She identified his potential early on, exploiting his intelligence and desperate need for belonging to shape him into her perfect operative. Her husband, Archie, sexually assaulted Cade when he was 19, adding another devastating layer of trauma to Cade's already complicated psyche. The assault served as both a demonstration of power and a means of control, ensuring Cade's silence through shame and fear. Together, they keep Cade compliant through calculated threats to his family, particularly his institutionalized father, whose care they can influence with a single phone call. This power structure creates a seemingly inescapable trap, reinforced by years of psychological manipulation and real-world consequences. When Archie photographs Cade with Stacy in an intimate moment, it triggers a dangerous chain reaction. Bernadette, viewing any emotional attachment as a liability, sends armed men to eliminate Stacy. This dramatic escalation reveals the depths of Bernadette's control and her willingness to destroy lives to maintain it. Cade's desperate attempt to protect Stacy while maintaining his cover demonstrates how thoroughly he's entangled in this web, forced to navigate impossible choices between duty, survival, and genuine human connection. The novel's exploration of institutional power extends beyond Bernadette and Archie to include the broader systems that failed both protagonists. The police repeatedly ignored Stacy's reports of abuse, treating domestic violence as a low priority. Her father dismissed her claims about Chris's escalating behavior, prioritizing social appearances over his daughter's safety. Even Cade's court-mandated therapist failed to recognize his deteriorating mental state, missing crucial signs of trauma and exploitation. These institutional failures in law enforcement, family structures, and mental health services left both characters vulnerable to exploitation and abuse, highlighting how systemic negligence creates perfect conditions for predators in positions of power to operate unchecked. Through these layered power dynamics, Rivers illustrates how corruption at the highest levels creates ripple effects throughout society, trapping vulnerable individuals in cycles of abuse and silence. The web of control extends beyond physical threats to encompass psychological manipulation, social pressure, and institutional complicity, making escape seem impossible for those caught within it. Insatiable delves deeply into the seemingly inescapable patterns of violence that shape its characters' lives, while exploring the possibility of breaking free from these destructive cycles. Cade's trajectory mirrors his father's descent into violence with haunting precision. From his initial resistance to becoming that kind of man, to his gradual acceptance of brutality as a necessary evil. His childhood memories of watching his father's rage episodes become particularly poignant as he recognizes the same darkness emerging within himself. Despite his earlier promises to never raise a hand in anger, he finds himself drawn into increasingly violent confrontations, each justified by necessity, until the line between protection and aggression blurs beyond recognition. Stacy's story parallels this cycle in its own way, as she unconsciously recreates patterns from her troubled past. Her teenage experiences with an abusive boyfriend left deep psychological scars that manifest in her adult relationships. She gravitates toward dangerous situations and men who remind her of her past trauma, even as she consciously tries to break free. Her work at the Shelter for Abuse Survivors serves as both redemption and reminder, helping others while confronting her own unresolved trauma. Rivers weaves moments of profound humanity throughout these dark patterns. A pivotal scene occurs when Stacy discovers Cade badly beaten in an alley, barely conscious and covered in blood. Despite every instinct telling her to run, she stays to clean his wounds, her gentle ministrations contrasting sharply with the violence that brought him there. This act of compassion, choosing care over fear, represents a small but significant break in their cycle of mutual destruction. Cade's own moment of potential redemption comes through sacrifice. When confronted by Bernadette and Archie's brutal interrogation about Stacy's identity, he endures hours of systematic violence without breaking. His silence protects not just Stacy, but also represents a choice to value something above violence, a first step toward reclaiming his humanity. The novel concludes at a crucial intersection of choice and consequence. Stacy's decision to reach out to Tobias Mitchell, a man with his own complicated relationship to violence, suggests both desperation and hope. Meanwhile, Cade's defiance of his employers marks the first time he's chosen loyalty over survival. These choices carry potentially fatal consequences, yet also offer the first real possibility of breaking their respective cycles of violence. The ambiguous ending leaves readers questioning whether redemption requires complete escape from violence or if it can be found in the small choices to protect rather than destroy. Rivers suggests that while breaking cycles of violence may be monumentally difficult, the capacity for change persists even in the darkest circumstances. Throughout Insatiable, Rivers grapples with the complex and often uncomfortable questions of consent and agency. The novel's most disturbing scenes, from Chris's systematic abuse of Stacy to Bernadette and Archie's calculated manipulation of Cade, involve clear violations of consent that leave lasting psychological scars on the characters. Yet even the central relationship between the protagonists contains troubling elements, particularly in their present-day sexual encounters where anger and violence intertwine with desire in ways that blur traditional boundaries of consent. Rivers doesn't provide easy answers about whether their relationship is healthy or destructive. Instead, she presents characters whose understanding of consent has been fundamentally warped by trauma. Cade's possessiveness manifests in subtle ways, checking Stacy's phone, questioning her male friendships, and demanding to know her whereabouts. Stacy's acceptance of these controlling behaviors reflects her damaged perspective on relationships, often mistaking jealousy for love and control for protection. What makes the novel compelling, rather than simply exploitative, is how meticulously it connects these distorted dynamics to the characters' histories. Cade's controlling tendencies mirror what he witnessed in his childhood home, where his father's protection of his mother manifested as surveillance and isolation. Stacy's difficulty establishing boundaries stems from years of having hers violated by her stepbrother, creating a pattern where she struggles to distinguish between care and control. The psychological complexity deepens as Rivers explores how trauma responses can become cyclical. Cade's hypervigilance about Stacy's safety, while rooted in genuine care, often recreates the very patterns of control he witnessed and despised in his father. Similarly, Stacy's tendency to withhold information from Cade, ostensibly to protect him, mirrors the secrets and lies that characterized her childhood household. The novel asks whether two deeply traumatized people can form a healthy relationship or if they're doomed to perpetuate cycles of harm. The answer remains deliberately ambiguous, leaving readers to contemplate whether Cade and Stacy's intense connection represents love, obsession, or some complex combination of both. Rivers suggests that healing is possible, but never simple, especially when past trauma continues to influence present behavior in subtle and overt ways. Through their story, Rivers examines broader questions about the nature of consent in relationships shaped by trauma. Can genuine consent exist between people whose understanding of boundaries has been so fundamentally damaged? The novel doesn't offer definitive answers, but instead presents these questions with nuance and complexity, forcing readers to contemplate their own assumptions about love, power, and healing. At its core, Insatiable is about two people whose identities have been shattered by trauma, struggling to find wholeness. Cade's transformation from troubled but loving teenager to cold-blooded killer represents a fragmentation of self he can barely reconcile who he was with who he's become. Stacy similarly struggles with her identity, presenting different versions of herself to different people while hiding her ongoing abuse. Their reunion forces both to confront these fragmented selves. When Stacy sees Cade kill someone, she must reconcile this violent man with the boy who once held her hand during movies and sketched their initials intertwined. When Cade discovers the truth about the video, he must face how his misunderstanding destroyed not only their relationship, but also his own moral compass. The novel's title, Insatiable, refers not just to their sexual desire for each other, but to their deeper hunger for wholeness and understanding. Both characters are consumed by needs they can't fully articulate. Cade's need to protect and possess Stacy, Stacy's need to be truly seen and believed, and their shared need to make sense of the traumas that shape them. Rivers leaves us wondering whether these shattered identities can ever be fully restored, or if the best they can hope for is to create something new from the broken pieces. As the first book in a trilogy, Insatiable sets up this question without resolving it, inviting readers to follow Cade and Stacy's journey toward either redemption or destruction in the volumes to come. What makes Insatiable stand out in the crowded dark romance genre is its unflinching exploration of how trauma creates bonds that are simultaneously destructive and necessary for survival. Cade and Stacy are drawn together not despite their damaged parts, but because of them. Each recognizes in the other a similar brokenness that doesn't need to be explained or justified. Their relationship exists in a moral gray area that defies simple categorization. Is Cade a villain for his violence or a victim of manipulation? Is Stacy enabling his darkness or finding her own power through their connection? Rivers refuses to provide clear answers, instead presenting the complexity of human relationships formed in the crucible of trauma. The novel ends with both characters taking steps toward truth, Stacy reaching out to Tobias Mitchell to help save Cade from his dangerous life, and Cade beginning to acknowledge the extent of his manipulation by Bernadette and Archie. Whether these tentative moves toward honesty will lead to healing or further destruction remains to be seen, but they suggest that even in the darkest circumstances, the possibility of change exists. As readers turn the final page of Insatiable, they're left with the haunting question that drives both protagonists. Is it possible to find light after experiencing such profound darkness? The answer awaits in the trilogy's continuation, but the journey itself, complex, disturbing, and unforgettable, ensures Rivers' place among the most compelling voices in contemporary dark romance.